What Constitutes a Successful Practitioner by Ernest Holmes. This article was written for the April 1939 Science of Mind magazine. A spiritual practitioner is one who devotes their time and attention to ministering to the needs of those who call upon them for help. It is their business, theoretically, to convert physical conditions into corresponding mental states. In doing this, they confine their entire activity to the field of mind, leaving all objective forms of practice to those who operate in such fields. They have no argument over objective methods of medicine, surgery, or manipulation, recognizing as they should that each has its own place and that all are seeking the same end, the mitigation of human suffering. But the mental practitioner must, of necessity, remain in their own field. It is their business to heal the mind through a spiritualization of the consciousness. Hence, their entire practice is built upon the theory that we are living in a spiritual universe. And in their practice, they must mentally disregard any material evidence which contradicts this assumption. They are conscious in their own mind that the universe is a perfect, harmonious unit. They are certain that, no matter what the objective appearance to the contrary may be, man is still an eternal and perfect manifestation of the divine. Consequently, the spiritual practitioner has a principle to demonstrate, and that principle is their understanding of the harmony of the universe, the unity of the all good, but the presence of a dynamic and creative power, which we call spirit, ever present and ever available. The mental and spiritual practitioner knows exactly what they are doing, and if they are properly trained, they know how to proceed. That is, they not only have a principle to demonstrate, but they have a technique or a method of procedure. Generally speaking, the one who has had the broadest experience in life should be the practitioner. They view their patients, or those who come to them for help, neither as saints nor as sinners. They have no opinion whatsoever about them as persons. Hence he treats each and all exactly alike, giving of their best to everyone who comes to them, and expecting and requiring that they shall compensate them with the best they have. For without such compensation on their part, whether it be of money or of gratitude, the law of balance and equilibrium is not maintained. But the practitioner is very careful not to have any personal opinions about their patients. For if their work takes place in thought, then any personal opinion they might have about their patients would be a part of their thought about them. And if that opinion were not good, their work would not be good. It is easy to see, then, that the spiritual practitioner must think of everyone who comes to them as part of the eternal principle of reality and never as being separated from it. No person should be more tolerant or broad-minded or more understanding of human reactions than spiritual practitioners. The practitioner must plunge not only beneath the physical pain and objective discord, they must also see through what the world calls sin, mistake, misunderstanding, and fear. They clear the way mentally, and as it were, lets down fire from heaven through the consciousness of their patient. They do this, of course, by straightening out their own thought about the patient. Sin, disease, punishment, discord, fear, and doubt, all are denials of the eternal good. All finally will be healed through a realization of the eternal good. It is the practitioner's business to seek such realization. A practitioner should never take a personal responsibility for their patient. They have an obligation, however, to fulfill their contract, that is, to give definite time each day working for their patient. Hence, they should take only a certain number of persons, and if they have agreed to treat each one every day, they are dishonest unless they devote special time for each individual case. They have contracted to do a certain piece of work and must discharge their duty. This does not pertain, however, to their private life, for they have every right to choose whom their personal friends and acquaintances shall be, and to decide what they wish to do with their time, and in whose company they wish to be. Practice is neither well-wishing nor wishing people well. Practice of the science of mind is based upon a definite principle over which we need have no superstition whatsoever. This principle is the law of mind in action. The laws with which we deal in the mental and spiritual realm are just as real as the laws in any other field, and must be as definitely and consciously dealt with if we expect to have specific and desirable results. In order to do the best possible work, the practitioner must have the complete confidence of their patient. Hence, they have a solemn obligation placed upon them never to reveal in the slightest degree any of the intimate conversations which must take place between practitioner and patient. This is their obligation, but the responsibility for the demonstration rests entirely in the principle of creativeness with which they deal. In this principle, they must have implicit confidence. They must know that it will work out every problem and heal all confusion. A spiritual practitioner does not enter this practice merely from the standpoint of a remunerative profession. And yet, if they are well balanced, they have every right to expect such remuneration. Their motive, however, is to do good. The implicit confidence in the law of cause and effect should automatically draw from those whom they help an equal good. Their work is not in proper balance unless this action takes place. A spiritual practitioner does not think of some people as important while others are not. There is no social register, no blue book, and no man or influence in their practice. They know that the kingdom of heaven has no favorites and that the law of cause and effect is no respecter of persons. Therefore, they treat each and all exactly alike. Like the confessional, this intimate relationship is sacred and not to be divulged. As a general rule, practitioners should never discuss their patients with anyone, but rather let their demonstrations speak for themselves. To the practitioner, their practice is a sacred thing, for they reach the interior of people's consciousness. They must never violate the trust which people impose in them. Fortunately, only those who comply with the law will receive any permanent result in their practice. The whole principle is, in a certain sense, foolproof. In order to do the best spiritual mind healing, the highest form of love must be realized in the mind of the practitioner. This exalted atmosphere can be reached only as they first leave behind everything that is petty or too personal. The more rarefied atmospheres of thought cannot be attained while vindictiveness, personal pride, or avarice stand in the way. It is very important that the mental and spiritual practitioner maintain an atmosphere of calm and peace at all times. It is equally as important that they maintain an atmosphere of joy and a sense of well-being. They must, if they are to do good work, have a sense of spontaneous self-recognition. They must put enthusiasm in their work and take joy out of it. They must learn to view life neither as bitter nor unbearable, but rather as the process through which the soul is going to the attainment of an absolutely certain goal. They must sense that the kingdom of heaven is at hand, that all people now live in this kingdom. They must be absolutely convinced that as they uncover a recognition of this kingdom in their own mind, then that recognition shall produce through their patient a manifestation of the harmony and the perfection which they have sensed. The secret place of the Most High must be to the practitioner an intense reality. They dare not judge merely according to appearances. If they hope to prove the supremacy of spiritual thought, force over apparent material resistance, they must remain steadfast and true to this ideal. It is the very cornerstone of the principle which they seek to demonstrate. All of their thoughts, arguments, and realizations are bent toward this one end, to realize the divine presence in every person, in every event that transpires, to know that God is over all, in all, and through all.